In the book of Daniel, chapter 7 is an interesting verse or chapter. I don't want to go into the first 8 verses, but if you move down to verse 9 of chapter 7, notice it says, I beheld. Well, I should back up to this and say this, that if you look at verse 2 in this chapter, you'll notice this is Daniel's dream. We have to be careful there because chapter 2 is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. This one is Daniel's dream. And you'll notice here, it's back in verse 2, he says, I saw in my vision by night, and so on. I don't want to get into this one here because it's a little complicated. But let's move on down to verse 9. And there Daniel says, I beheld and I saw thrones that were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit. Now this is one of the very few times that we're seeing a vision of Yahweh himself. I think there are 3 others in the scriptures, this one in Daniel, Ezekiel, and the book of Revelation. Notice it says, the Ancient of Days, whose garment was white as snow. Now again, this is a vision. Because in John chapter 1 and verse 18, and also you move into the writings of John, he says, no man has seen Yahweh at any time. You neither heard his voice nor seen his shape. But Daniel here had this dream, this vision. He describes him and says, his hair and his head was like pure wool, his throne like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. Of course, Ezekiel talks about the wheels within wheels and so on in the first chapter and then again in the 10th chapter. But in verse 10 it says, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, thousands, thousands, ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. I beheld then, because the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning fire. Talking here about the beast that comes on at the end of the age. Yahweh always tells the end from the beginning so that when you read it, you know it's going to turn out all right. And here he does it again, talking about the beast being slain and so on. In verse 12 it says, as concerning the rest of the beasts, their lives were prolonged for a season and the time. And verse 13, again, Daniel says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came. Now, who is this? Well, here's the vision. He saw Yahshua. And Yahshua is the one that opens the books. And this is basically what I want to talk about, opening the books so we understand them. So one like the Son of Man came in with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Verse 14. And there was given to him, that is given to Yahshua, a dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed. And Daniel was grieved in his spirit because he couldn't understand what these visions meant. Verse 16, he says, I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, let me know the interpretation of these things. These great beasts which are 4 kings which shall arise out of the earth. Now notice again, verse 18, he tells the end from the beginning. These 4 beasts come up, but wait a minute. Don't worry about it. The saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever. Verse 19, then I would know the truth of the 4th beast, which, by the way, has not arisen yet. It's still in the offing. It was different from all others, exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth were of iron, his nails of brass, which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns which were in his head, and of the others that came up, and before them 3 fell, even of the horn that had eyes and a great mouth that spake very great things. If you want to just stop here a minute and go back to verse 8, it talks here about the horns again. But notice in verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom were three of the first plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. This is really the man of sin he's talking about here. Let's go back to verse 20 again. It says he had the mouth that spoke very great things. He was a braggart, and he was boasting that he could do anything. In fact, he's saying that he is Yahweh himself. And it says, whose look was more stout than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn which made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Hold your thumb here, and we're going over to the book of Revelation, chapter 13. I want to tie this together so that you understand that what we're reading here is also mentioned in the New Testament, chapter 13. And as we move on down there, well, let's see, verse 6. We're in Revelation 13 and verse 6. He opened his mouth in blasphemy against Elohim, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints. So here we have this individual making war with the saints. In fact, as long as you're here in 13, you can probably read the last verse in chapter 12, just before this, verse 17. It reads there, and the dragon was angry with the woman, went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua the Messiah. So we're dealing now with the man of sin. We're dealing with the man that's going to come on the scene at the end of the age. He's going to make war with the saints. And all this business about a rapture and being taken off to heaven and being looked down and see what's going on earth is a bunch of hogwash. The saints have to prove themselves and go through these things to prove they're worthy of Yahweh's trust and honor. So here we have in this seventh verse of chapter 13, it was given to him to make war with the saints. And by the way, when you go back to chapter 11 here in verse in the book of Revelation, you find the two witnesses are the ones that actually I believe he's talking about. But that's another study. We're getting kind of far afield here. But notice it says, power was given to this man over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book. Now we're talking about a special book that Yahweh has. And we find that it's the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man has an ear, listen to what's going on. You know, he goes on to tell about it. Let's go back to Daniel again. Back in the book of Daniel. Now we're in verse 21. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Does that let us know that Yahweh is going to protect us and take care of the man of sin or whoever this is? No, it says he prevailed against them. There's going to be killings. There's going to be murder. There's going to be killing of the saints. But that's okay, because in verse 22 it says he prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Again, Yahweh tells the end from the beginning. He says, it's going to be terrible, it's going to be rough, but hang in there. It's going to be great someday. You're going to be able to possess the kingdom and be rulers in the kingdom. That's the promise. Verse 23, Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth, and shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, cut it down, break it in pieces. And the ten horns out of this kingdom are ten kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them. And he shall be diverse from the first, and shall subdue three kings. And he shall speak great words. Notice how this man is always speaking great words, always telling everyone that he is the one Most High. Excuse me. He shall speak great words against the Most High and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. He's going to change the times and the laws. And they shall be given unto his hand until the time and the times and the dividing of a time. And then we find in verse 26, the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion and consume and destroy it unto the end. So here we're reading about the end of the age, what's going to happen. Verse 27, and the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey Yahweh. Again, he tells us the end from the beginning. Always remember that. No matter what comes, Yahweh knows it's going to come. He allows it. But he does it for a purpose, and that purpose is to test the people. Are you going to give in when the going gets rough? You throw in the sponge when you really should be there? Because Yahweh has chosen certain people to take the brunt of some of the worst things that can happen to the human race. And that could be what might happen to us. We never know. Verse 28 says, here too is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations, my thoughts much trouble me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. Well, let's go back here. I want to now go over to the book of Revelation again. And I missed the one here in verse 5, chapter 13 and verse 5. I just want to mention here that it says that unto this man who's going to make war with the saints, he has this power for 42 months, 3.5 years. So it's not going to be 20 years, 30 years, 50 years. 3.5 years of some of the most intense persecution this world has ever seen. But it won't last long. And that's what Yahweh tells us. Let's go and see what Yahshua said. In chapter 24 of the book of Matthew, here we have the Olivet prophecy. And before you, we'll start here with chapter 24 and verse 1. Yahshua went out and departed from the temple. What had really happened there? Well, you read verse 23 and what he was doing, chapter 23. What you find there is that Yahshua was actually condemning the Pharisees. He said that, in fact, he said, woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees. Eight times we have the woes here that he talks about them, how they pretend they're righteous and holy, but they're not. So we have, he just walked out of there and he said there in the last verse 37, actually we'll begin there. Of chapter 23. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, stonest them which are sent unto you, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't listen. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. And as you know, within just a short time, the Romans came in and wrecked the temple. Of course, it happened about 40 years later, but he said, your house is empty. And that was the same time when the temple curtain was ripped from the top to the bottom, a pinnacle or a stone that they had holding up the curtain. Earthquake came and cracked that, and it fell down and tore the temple hanging from top to bottom. Well, that's another story. But anyway, he says in verse 39, he says, your house is left desolate, for I say unto you, you shall not see me henceforth until you say, blessed is he that comes in Yahweh's name. Of course, you know the Jews never use Yahweh's name, but the time is coming, they'll be converted and they will. You find that in the 12th chapter of Zechariah. He talks about that. The conversion of all the people in Jerusalem. The governors and the residents and the Jews and the people that are there, they're all going to turn to Yahweh because he's going to perform something in Jerusalem when everybody else had given up hope. Well, let's move on down to Matthew 24 here now. The disciples come to Yahshua and they show him the great stones, the rocks, the construction of the temple. And they say, isn't that terrific how they built that temple? That was Herod's temple, as you know. And notice it says here, when they said that, you notice these buildings and the building blocks. And verse 2, he said, well, you see all these things? I'm telling you right now that there not shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. In fact, if you've read any of the news over from Jerusalem, you'll notice that there is a place they call the Temple Mount. And more scholars are coming to conclude that that is not where the temple was. That the temple was actually about a block away, over the brook Gihon, where the water gushed out of underneath the temple. And that the building, that building there, that was not the building, the Temple Mount that is called, is actually the fort of San Antonio. That's where the 13,000, 15,000, whatever it was, Roman troops stayed. And that's where they lived. So that this Temple Mount is actually, you see, the reason I bring that up is because some people say, well, look at all those stones, especially on the Western Wall where the Jews go and worship. In fact, I remember we were there and we'd see them take little notes and write something and stick it up between the cracks of these big, huge stones that were there. And it was usually a prayer. And then I remember one man there said, I don't really believe that this is where we should be. I don't think this is right because Yahshua said, thank you, there will not be one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And that Temple Mount, it even has gates and pathways leading up to one of the gates. But I do believe that one of the reasons, like the Jews have been there since 1948, haven't they? They haven't done anything. They haven't built another temple. Yet Yahweh scolds them when they were to go back to Jerusalem under Ezra and Nehemiah and get the temple built. And they did. Here we are, over 50 years later, and nothing's happened. My own feeling is, the reason probably is, that they haven't got the right spot to build the temple. They haven't dug that out yet. Well, it's something to think about. Sometimes we don't always understand everything, but it's one of those things you kind of want to put in the back of your mind, and when you read about the Temple Mount being changed, that the fact the Jews don't remember where the Temple Mount was anyway, the original one, where Herod's temple was. Because when Titus came back and looked at that, he said, I never would have believed there was a city here. Everything is leveled. No stones. And some of those stones were like 12 feet long and 4 and 5 feet thick. And they moved them out of there. And that was to show the strength and the power of the Roman army. And they did that deliberately. Well, anyway, Yahshua said, there will not be left here one stone upon another that is not thrown down. So this makes a lot of people believe that that is not really the Temple Mount, but maybe close to it. But let's move on. Yahshua sat at the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came unto him privately. And they said to him, when should all these things be? He just said that the temple is going to be torn down. It won't even stand here anymore. And the disciples said, when's all this going to happen? Those big stones, how are they going to move all those? And he said, what will be the sign of your coming? And what is the end of the age? He had three questions they asked. So in verse 4 he said, let no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Messiah, and shall deceive many. We just read about the man of sin back there in the book of Daniel. He spoke great words with his mouth, bragged about the fact that he was the returned Messiah, but he's not. And Yahshua said that this man will deceive many. In fact, Daniel said he deceived the whole world. The whole world would have believers that would follow him. But he says in verse 5, many will come in my name, saying, I am Messiah, and shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in diverse places. These are all the beginning of sorrows. Rather interesting. In verse, I want you to do this. Skip down to verse 24. And it's, again, Yahshua said, there shall arise false messiahs and false prophets, and shall so show great signs and wonders, insomuch, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Who are the very elect? Well, I hope they're you and I, and that we are the elect. We're striving to be with Yahweh's power of the Holy Spirit and our faithfulness in Him. We know we can be. Move on down to verse 31. Talking about Yahweh shall send His angels with a great sound of a trumpet. They shall gather together His elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So we find there that they're going to come from all over. Not only Jerusalem, but all around the world. What is interesting when you read what Yahshua said here, I want you to go over to the, keep your thumb here in Matthew, but I'm going to go over to the book of Revelation again and point out in the fifth chapter, about a book. We just read in the book of Daniel about a book that the Ancient of Days had, and Yahshua was the one that opened the book. In the fifth chapter of Revelation, notice here, I saw the right hand of Him that sat on the throne, a book written within and on the backsides, sealed with seven seals. Actually, I got a note here somewhere. Oh, here it is. It says Revelation 5. David Einhorn in the New York Times in 1956 said that does, in the Hebrew, that was not a book written on the backside. What it meant was it's written from right to left. It meant the book was written in Hebrew. That was his point. And anyway, that, I remember reading that in the New York Times special. So here we have a book written in Hebrew. Verse 2, and I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the book and loose the seals thereof? You remember that Yahshua said, no man knows the hour or the day when he's going to return. But when Yahweh gives him the book and says, here's the book, here are your marching orders, Yahshua, start redeeming the earth. And that's when he comes back. Yahweh gives him the orders and Yahshua carries them out. Here we have a book. And the question is, who is worthy to open the seals thereof? And no man in heaven nor on earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereupon. And I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look thereon. And one of the elders said unto me, weep not, behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof. And I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne on the four beasts, and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb, as it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of Yahweh. And they are sent forth into all the earth. I firmly believe that Yahweh is sending out His Spirit now, because we have more people that are interested in Yahweh's name, keeping the Sabbath, looking forward to what we should be doing instead of all of the pabulum that they get from the churches and don't teach them anything about Yahweh's way of life. But His Spirit comes out and entices people to sit down and study the Bible in sincerity and earnestness, because that is what we're supposed to do. Here we have the book and the seven spirits going forth from the book. And he came and took the book out of the right hand of him that sat upon the throne. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of the saints. So we know that incense ascending in the Old Testament was a prayer. It was type of a prayer. And then we find that they sang or sung a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for you were slain and have redeemed us to Yahweh by the blood of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and made unto us, unto our Eloah, kings and priests, and we shall reign on earth." Some Bible says they shall reign on earth. "And I beheld and heard the voice of many angels round about the throne and the beasts and the elders." So here we have one Yahweh sitting there, and he has the book, and nobody's willing to open it or able to, only Yahshua. And now as we move on down, notice it says, "The number of angels round about the throne and the beasts and elders, and the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, 'Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and such that are in the sea and that are in them, heard I saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sits upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever.' And the four beasts said, 'So be it.' And the 24 elders fell down and worshipped him that lives forever and ever." So here we have Yahshua on his Father's throne. Now in chapter 6, we have something interesting that goes back to what Yahshua said in the book of Matthew, chapter 24. Notice here in chapter 6 now, John wrote, "And I saw the Lamb opened one of the seals and heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, 'Come and see.'" Now, verse 2 says, "I saw and behold a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer." Let's go back to the book of Matthew, and notice here in verse 4 of chapter 24, we'll come back to 6 in a minute, but I want to tie this together. In verse 4 and beginning there, it says, "Take heed that no man deceive you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am Messiah,' and will deceive many." You go back and look at this man on the white horse. He had a bow, but he had no arrow. He had no arrows at all. This is talking about the deception. In fact, Dr. Bullinger points this out. If you have a companion Bible, that's what he says. Chapter 6 here is referring back to Matthew chapter 24, because it is Yahshua that opens the book, shows us what these things mean. As long as we're in the book of Revelation, let's read what verse 3 says. "And when he had opened the second seal, I heard him say, 'Come and see.' And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword." So this one has a sword. Not only that, but he uses it. Now go back to the book of Matthew again, and notice in verse 6. It says, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom." So here we have in chapter 6 talking about war, making war, and that's what Yahshua said. Follow that completely. As you move on down, in verse 5 of chapter 6 of Revelation, it says, "And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, 'Come and see.' And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand." Well, that was showing that famine is in the land, in the world. Verse 6, and I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts saying, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. Wheat is more expensive than barley. You get three times as much barley as you do wheat. And see that you hurt not the oil and the wine. So he's talking here about famine. And you go back here to the book of Matthew, and you'll notice there that it says, nation shall rise against nation, and there shall be famines and pestilence. It all falls into perfect order. And then the next thing we read in the book of Matthew, it says, earthquakes in diverse places. Well, we'll go back here to the book of Revelation and move on down to verse 7, or no, actually verse 8. I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given to him over the fourth part of the earth to kill with a sword, and hunger, and death, beasts of the earth. So all these things tie together. And it was Yahshua who opened up the book, let the people know what this is all talking about. You might find that's rather interesting. As you continue reading in chapter 6 and verse 9, we read then about martyrdom. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of Yahweh and for the testimony thereof. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Yahweh, holy and true, do you not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? So we have great tribulation there. And the white robes were given unto them, every one of them. And it was said unto them that they should rest for a little season until their kins, our fellow servants, had also, and their brethren, should be killed as they were, and that should be fulfilled. You know, you can go back to the book of Genesis. The reason I bring this up, some people talk about the souls under the earth. What that really means, that the blood that was shed in the tabernacle with an animal, the blood was really spattered at the base of the altar. Here we have the saints that have died. There, it says their blood is at the base of the altar, under the altar. And to say that, avenge our blood that dwells on the earth, you know that in the book of Genesis, Abel's blood, in Genesis chapter 4, it talks about Abel's blood. And verse 10, cries to me from the ground. It's a simile, and allegories are always filled here, especially in the book of Revelation. And it does it here again. But the point is that when you read something like this, and then you have some of these churches tell you about you can be wafted up to heaven in the rapture and watch all this stuff go on, it can't be. These are saints, Yahweh's people, and they're undergoing punishment and they're undergoing death. And so we find here in verse 12 about an earthquake that takes place. And Yahshua talked about earthquakes. And here in Revelation 6 and verse 12, it says, I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. Kind of reminds you of what happened with the ancient Israelites in the land of Egypt, doesn't it? The sun being darkened, blood on all over the place, and so on. Verse 13 talks about the stars of heaven falling to the earth, and so on. So Yahweh, in his anger, is going to do these things, but also he promises us that before that happens, he will strengthen his people, and his spirit power will be given to his people. The reason I wanted to bring this up, we have these things happen, and the thing that Yahshua said, don't be deceived. And Paul said the same thing, don't be deceived. The other day, Brother Della and I were talking about this self-same thing. What did that really mean, don't be deceived? If you were the man of sin, and you wanted to proclaim who you were, what do you think you'd have to do? One thing you probably would have to do is get rid of that New Testament. But I want you to go back to the book of Daniel, chapter 11. We have to get kind of a feeling here for what we're getting into now. Excuse me. The book of Daniel is rather a deep book, and yet I don't want to go into it the whole thing today. We haven't got this kind of time. But in the 11th chapter, most scholars feel that part of this 11th chapter has been fulfilled. And they say it has up until verse 20, chapter 11 of Daniel and verse 20. In verse 20, it says, "And there shall stand up in his estate," of whoever this man is, a raiser of taxes. Someone's going to be there that raises taxes of the people. They're going to really enforce the taxes and make life all the harder. Notice it says, "Then shall stand up in his estate, in his place, a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom, but within few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger or in battle." Excuse me. He probably will die of some disease or whatever it is. But now in verse 21, we're getting back to what most scholars feel is the man of sin, the one we've just been reading about, who speaks great things with his mouth. "In his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor or the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably." So he comes in peaceably. That already tells us to watch out for this guy. He's too peaceable. He's too quiet. "And he'll obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of the flood shall they be overflown before him and shall be broken." I want to take you back here. Hold your thumb here. I want you to go back to chapter 7. I want you to realize what we're reading here is already been said most of the time. But in chapter 7, notice verse 24. We're in chapter 7, 24 of Daniel. "And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise. Another shall arise after them." And then we read, "He shall be different from the first and shall subdue 3 kings. And he shall speak great words against the Most High and shall wear out the saints of the Most High and think to change times and the laws. And they shall be given into his hand for 3.5 years. Let's go over here now to the 8th chapter. And notice in verse 9, we read about this again. "And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, toward the pleasant land. It waxed great even to the host of heaven, and cast down some of the host and the stars to the ground, and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it prospered, and practiced and prospered." So we find that this is, again, talking about the man of sin. My point in doing this is to show you that when you read Daniel, you're not going to get a straight picture. It'll jump back and forth, and you have to be alert to that. But this 11th chapter is kind of sums everything up. So I want to tie that together, make sure we understand it, because we'll come across it again here in the same chapter. Now notice here, it talks about he makes a league in verse 23. "And after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully." So he makes a league. Have you been alert to what's going on over there in Israel when they talk about making peace with the people over there? It's always 7 years. Why 7 years? Why not 10 years? Why not 5 years? Seven. It's always 7 years. That's what it says. And you will find that in the midst of that 7 year, 3.5 years is when he breaks the agreement that he has with the people. Verse 23, "After the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall be strong with a small people." So it's kind of like communism got a foothold in Russia, for example. There wasn't very many people, but the ones in the right places were able to establish communism in Russia. And here, this man does the same thing. He has a small following, but a very dedicated following, and they help him out. He shall enter peaceably, even the fattest of places of the province. And he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his father's father. And he shall scatter among them the prey, the spoil and riches. What is that saying? That he is going to give away certain things to get a following after himself. He'll favor certain people with riches and prey and spoil. Well, it sounds like perks, huh? You join him and you get all kinds of extra stuff. All kinds of perks like the politicians do today. And it says, he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds, even for a time. He'll brag and say he's going to do this and do that. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army. Wherever the king of the south is, some scholars feel it's Egypt. Some feel it's some other, something else that's coming up. But he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. Yea, they that feed the portion of his meat shall destroy him. So the ones that are working with him actually are the ones that destroy him. They work against him. You know, it talks here like the cupbearer was against him. You know, the kings usually had a cupbearer, and the cupbearer's job was to taste all the food that came in to feed the king. And if the cupbearer died, then the king wouldn't eat that food because he knew it was poisoned. That's what a cupbearer's job was. Nehemiah was a cupbearer back in the Old Testament as well. And that was his job, to taste things for the king so that the king wouldn't be poisoned. So here we have the same concept here, that they that feed the portion of his meat shall destroy him, and his army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. In both these kings' hearts, there's the king of the south and this man. And we read there, and they shall speak lies at one table, but it shall not prosper. Yet the end shall be at the time appointed. Why is that there? The end shall be at the time appointed. Time appointed is usually Moed. The times appointed are the Moedim, Yahweh's feast days. Here we're pointed to this fact. This will probably take place at a feast day in the time ahead of us. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant. So now he's going to do something even more. And he shall do exploits and return to his own land at the time appointed. There we have it again. Yahweh inserts his own warning in there, telling us a little more, that if we're not alert to what he means, we'll ride right over it. At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as a former nor as a latter. For the ships of the Chittim shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and give intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant. This 11th chapter gives the whole account here of what this man of sin is going to do. I don't want to read all of these because we, let's see. Yeah, well, we'll move down to verse 32. The abominable, well, shouldn't I, for 31, I want to make a mention about it. It says, "And arms shall stand in his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate." This is what Yahshua talked about, the selfsame thing. Most scholars feel it's probably an idol that they put in the Holy of Holies. And it actually is given power to speak, and so on. You ever notice that in the Catholic Church, they always have a statue doing something? Crying tears or bleeding or something like that, kind of paving the groundwork for when somebody has a statue that talks, Well, it's nothing new. Had one that bled, had one that Christ hears, and so on. No big deal, except that this one can do even more. But notice in verse 32 it says, "And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their Elohim shall be strong and do exploits." The NIV says, "shall resist him." So here we find the man of sin is going to actually have perks and give away things to solidify his position. And he's also going to do wickedly against those that are keeping Yahweh's covenant. "And they that understand among the people shall instruct many." Verse 33. Brethren, that doesn't say, "and the teacher shall instruct many." It doesn't say, "the minister shall instruct many." It says, "those that know their mighty one." The people, they're the ones that are going to give courage and instruction to many of the other people that you're going to meet someday. It's up to you to know these things, to understand the deeper things of the Word. When somebody asks you a question, you can give them the right answer. "Yet they shall fall by the sword, by flame, by captivity, and by spoil many days." It's going to be a tough world, but the ends are worth it all. Now, verse 34, "When they shall fall, they shall be helped with a little help. Many shall cleave to them with flatteries." Going to be a lot of people that will come to you and they see that you're protected, seeing that you have the good things of life and you're content and you're willing to stand fast in spite of what's going on. They're going to want to be near you because you give them strength by the way you live, the things you say, the way you do things, and they'll cling on to you. But it says they do it with flatteries. They're not sincere. They just want the benefits that they can get from their association with you, whatever it might be. "Some of them of understanding shall fall to try them, to purge and to make them white." So there's going to be some that are going to fall by the wayside. They won't continue with the strong meat that Yahweh expects them to feed upon in the latter days. And the time of the end, even to the time of the end, because it is for a time appointed. There again, Yahweh warns us to be prepared for the time of the end. "The king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every deity." So this man of sin does exactly that. He says he's the greatest. And whatever he can do to exalt himself, he'll do it. "He shall speak marvelous things against Yahweh, the mighty one of all Elohim. And he shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined, and it shall be done. Neither shall he regard the mighty one of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor the regard of any Elohim, Eloah. For he shall magnify himself above all." Now this man, notice it says he doesn't worship any of his ancestral deities. He doesn't follow the religion of his father and mother and family. He has another religion. What is that religion? Well, take a look at verse 38, what it might be. "In his estate shall he honor the Elohim of forces, and a deity whom his father knew not shall he honor with gold." So something his father didn't know, and it's called the Elohim of forces. Dr. Bullinger says that it actually, the deity of forces means fortresses. I believe it means warfare. I think it means technology. It means rockets. It means anything scientific that they can wage war with. Some deity, and he says that he spends all his time, he spends his energies and time trying to get more of this. It says he honors them with gold and silver and precious stones. He's going to invest in these things, these pleasant things, to get even more technology. Airplanes that fly higher than ours, rockets that go farther, bombs that make bigger noise and have more destructive ability. It says, "Thus shall he do in the most strongholds." And with a strange deity. It's a different kind of a deity that he's worshiping. And he will acknowledge an increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. So he's going to divide up the land and give it to certain people, and use that to gain a following. Again, verse 40, and at the time of the end. Yahweh always tells us, don't worry about it, people, don't worry. I'm in charge. Nothing happens except I allow it. No one even gets to be a ruler unless I okay it. At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, and many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall also enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Now he's in the Holy Land. He's in Israel, the land of Israel, in the glorious land. And he talks about Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. That's Jordan. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So he gets the whole southern coast of the Mediterranean Sea. And he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, over all the precious things of Egypt. And the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be at his steps, do whatever he wants them to do. But notice here it says, but the tidings of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, and utterly to make away many. This is the interesting verse in verse 45. Notice it says here, and he shall plant his tabernacle of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help them. I believe what it's saying is he's going to occupy Jerusalem. He's going to move into the temple, whatever temple it is, whether it's a tent, whether it's a brick building, stone building, whatever it is. But I haven't got time to get in all this. Basically, what I believe happens, he sits himself up as being Yahweh himself. And he sits in the Holy of Holies. And the Jews know that's wrong. He can't do it. And they turn against him. So in the middle of that 3.5 years is when he turns on the Jews. He turns on anyone who's keeping the Sabbath and going against what he's teaching. So the problem is, he might even start in early. He might even think, well, I can't wait till that happens. Certainly he knows some of these things. What would be the biggest problem he really has? I think he will try to devalue or do away with the New Testament, because he can use the Old Testament and point out verses there that point directly to him. But when you get to the New Testament, he's got a problem. In fact, I often think about one of the elders we had up in the in Canada. And all of a sudden, one time, he called me and said, I hate to tell you this, but I don't think the New Testament's real. I've given it up. And I think it's a hokey kind of a book. I just got a book, I read it all, and everything he said in there was true. So I'm going back to the Old Testament only. That's all I'm going to believe. Well, tears and fasting didn't change him. He still has not come back. But I want you to go over here to the book of Thessalonians. If this man of sin wants to prove that he is the one that is going to be the returned Messiah, this is how he might do it. Get rid of some of these things that we have taken to believe and look for. If you can get rid of the New Testament and rely only on the Old, I'll show you a few verses, might convince some people. But notice, if you turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, notice in verse 14, it says, if we believe that Yahshua died and rose again, even so also them which sleep in Yahshua shall Elohim bring with him. Well, we just read that when Yahshua comes back, he'll have the angels and the saints with him and comes back to this earth. But he says in verse 15, Paul wrote, for this we say unto you by the word of Yahweh, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Master shall not prevent them which are asleep. Now here's the verse. For Yahshua himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and the trump of Elohim, and the dead in Messiah shall rise first. Now, if this is the return Messiah, and people talk about a secret rapture, he makes all kinds of noise when he comes back. Shout, voice of the archangel, trump, trumpet of Yahweh. The trumpet of Yahweh, you know what happened over in the book of Exodus when the trumpet of Yahweh blew. Israelites were so afraid, they said, Moses, Moses, you speak to us. We don't want to hear this. We're going to die. And if that trumpet makes that kind of noise, they're going to hear it all over the world. We know there it says, the dead in Messiah shall rise first. Then we which are alive, in verse 17, and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet Yahshua in the air. So shall we ever be with the Savior. And then we're told to comfort one another with these words. But notice as we move to verse 1 of chapter 5, but the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you, for you yourselves know perfectly well that the day of Yahweh comes as a thief in the night. We don't know exactly when it's coming. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destructions come upon them as travail upon a woman. If something happens over there in the Middle East, and all of a sudden you hear peace and safety, there's peace over there now, don't worry, we got it all calmed down, don't worry about it, we can go on living again like we always lived. Paul says, be careful when you hear that word peace and safety. Everything is fine now. He said, it'll come on them like a veil upon a woman. It'll just all of a sudden erupt. Verse 4, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. You are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the light and nor of darkness. I want you to go over to the book of 2 Thessalonians. We have not only the book of Matthew, chapter 24, we have the book of Mark, chapter 13, we have the book of Luke, chapter 21, and we have the book of Revelation, we have 1 and 2 Thessalonians, we have the resurrection chapter in 1 Corinthians 15, and so on. So many places that if that New Testament is meaningful to anybody, they certainly aren't going to believe the man of sin when he comes on the scene and sets himself up in the temple. But we should be alert to what he's doing even before he sets himself up up in the temple. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul writes again this second letter he wrote on the same topic. And I will beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Savior, by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us that the day of Yahweh is at hand. Let no man deceive you. So deception, you see, is something that Paul wrote about, Yahshua told us about, and this is what we have to watch. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except the come of falling away first. In fact, instead of saying a falling away, it should be the falling away, the great falling away. What is that falling away? What's going to start that? Well, probably it's what we already been reading about. A lot of people joining up with the man of sin, joining him in his way of worship. You know, one of the most artful and one of the greatest conquerors the world has ever known was Alexander. He, in his 3.5 years, he did more than most nations like Germany have tried to subdue the world. They haven't been able to do it. But Alexander basically said this, look, you people worship just the way you always have. If you, if you're a Hindu, you continue worshiping. If you're whatever it is, Brahma, fine. But remember this, all worship eventually comes to me. So you can take a shortcut, come right to me, and I can have a closer relationship with you rather than going to anybody else. And this might be what the man of sin will do for a while. Say, you can worship any way you want, but just remember, do it the way I do it, and be my people, and I'll take care of it. And I think basically that's what he does, because actually there are five main religions in the world. And basically, if you can get those five religions, you've pretty much got 90% of the world in the palm of your hand. And I think that's how he might do it. Well, it's another study. Let's get back to 2 Thessalonians. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come the falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called Elohim or that is worshipped. So he that as Elohim sits in the temple of Elohim, showing himself that he is Elohim. And by the way, if you have a Bible here, a study Bible, where that word temple is, it might have a capital T. My reason for bringing that up is because the word temple in this case is naos. It's not hieron, it's naos, N-A-O-S. And that means the inner sanctum, the holy of holies. And this is where that man is sitting, because that's what it says. He sits in the temple of Elohim. He says that he is Elohim. Remember you not when I was with you, I told you these things. And now you know that what withholds, that you might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets will let or will allow it until he be taken out of the way. Then will that wicked one be revealed, talking about the man of sin, whom Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness, again deception. He's a master at it. He deceives people and they don't know the difference. With all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause shall Yahweh shall send them strong delusion, that they might believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. And then notice the word in verse 13 where Paul gives us a word of encouragement. But you are bound to give thanks always to Yahweh for you, brethren, beloved of Yahweh, because he has from the beginning chosen you to salvation through sanctification of the Spirit and belief of the truth. Well, if these verses are clear in somebody's mind, I don't think they'd ever turn to follow the man of sin. But supposing the man of sin casts doubt on the New Testament, and people begin to think, well, maybe there's something to that. You can always believe the old, that's for sure, because that's been there a long time. Well, he might say, well, sure, turn over here in the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy, he would say, is actually telling about me. Turn to the 18th chapter of Deuteronomy. And there it speaks directly about me, he might say. He would say, well, he would say in chapter 18, for example, he move on down here to verse 15. Deuteronomy 18:15, Yahweh your Elohim will raise up unto you a prophet from the midst of you, of thy brethren like unto me. And I'm from the midst of you, he would say. I don't come from the sky. I'm from the midst of you. And you shall hearken. And then he'll say, if you don't believe that, read verse 18. I will raise for them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto you, and will put my words in his mouth. So that's why he's a great speaker, talks all the time, and he shall speak unto them that words that I will command him. And he will pick out verses like this. And notice he will probably skip verse 20, because that isn't something he wants to know. But he might go back to chapter 13 in the book of Deuteronomy, and that's basically the same thing, talking about those that are not really of Yahweh, but somebody who's a prophet and a dreamer of dreams and so on. So the whole point is that we don't really know where some of these things are going to take place. We should have another one, though. We only have Deuteronomy. Let's try Zechariah, chapter 6. Chapter 6 in Zechariah. And got Amos here. I'm getting there. Zechariah, chapter 6. Excuse me. We're in Zechariah chapter 6, and notice verse 12. Thus speaks Yahweh, saying, Behold the man whose name is a branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of Yahweh. Even he shall build the temple of Yahweh, and shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace between them both. You can take verses like this and sell them as being the one that prophesied his coming. And we find then that a lot of people will go along with it. But we know that is not going to happen with the true believers, and Yahweh is going to keep them. But I want to turn now to the book of Revelation, chapter 10. In the book... Excuse me. Chapter 10 is in the book of Revelation again. And here we have Yahshua. Beginning with verse 1 in chapter 10, I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face as it were the sun. Excuse me. And his feet were pillars of fire. And he had in his hand a little book. And he set his right hand upon the sea and his left hand on the earth. And cried with a loud voice as when a lion roars. And when he had cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. When the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write, and I heard a voice from heaven saying, unto me, seal those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. And the angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven, and he swore by him that lives forever and ever, who created heaven and things that therein are, and the earth and things that therein are, and the sea and the things that therein are, that there should be time no longer. But in the days of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of Elohim should be finished, as he has declared to his servants the prophets. And the voice which I heard from heaven spake unto me again, and said, Go, and take the little book which was open in the hand of the angel, and which stands upon the sea and upon the earth. I went unto the angel and said unto him, Give me that little book. And he said, Take it, eat it up. It shall be in your belly bitter, but it shall be in your mouth sweet as honey. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. And then he said to me, You must prophesy again before many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. And did you ever think when you read the prophecies that you were overjoyed to read these prophecies and know what's going to happen, and you're joyful and happy, and these words are like honey in your mouth, and then you think, hey, wait a minute, this whole earth is going to be subdued, everything's going to be turned upside down, and pretty soon you got a retching in your stomach, what's going to happen to me, my family, my friends, my relatives? Prophecy can be a book of two things, a book of honey, if we read it, and yet a book of bitterness when we understand what it really means. We know that Yahweh's in charge, and never forget that. He always tells the end from the beginning.